Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. The Senate today debated the Marriage Protection Amendment, a proposal that appeals mainly to those who would limit marriage to heterosexual couples and would define in a constitutional amendment an issue that is largely religious in nature. Senator Sam Brownback, Republican of Kansas, likened marriage to the defense of democracy.
A functioning marriage culture serves to protect political liberty and foster limited government.
According to the latest counts, the Republicans do not have enough votes to actually pass this amendment. The Pentagon has decided to omit from new detainee policies a key tenet of the Geneva Convention that explicitly bans, quote, humiliating and degrading treatment, end quote, according to knowledgeable military officials, a step that would mark a further potentially permanent shift away from strict adherence to international human rights standards. The decision could culminate a lengthy debate within the Defense Department, but will not become final until the Pentagon makes new guidelines public, a step that has been delayed. However, the State Department fiercely opposes the military's decision to exclude Geneva Convention protections and has been pushing for the Pentagon and White House to reconsider, the Defense Department officials acknowledged. Every morning, as ambulance cars and police vehicles rush to the hospital in Bab al-Mahaddam, carrying corpses of unidentified victims, a queue of women, teenagers, and elderly men forms in front of the morgue as people search for their relatives, fearing they might be found among the bodies. Usually one of their family members is lost or kidnapped by gunmen and then turns up after a week or so later as a corpse with gunshot wounds to the body. A further victim in the latest wave of sectarian violence or civil war that has swept through Iraq in recent months. Iraq's main morgue had never received that huge number of corpses on a daily basis, not since modern Iraq was established in the 1920s. According to statistics by Iraq's Morgues Institute, 6,002 corpses were found in the past 5 months, 1,068 in January, 1,110 in February, 1,294 in March, 1,155 in April, and 1,375 in May. Most of the corpses had gunshot wounds, while others showed marks of burns or electrocution. Morgues Institute officials said that since the Institute was established in 1927, it had never received such a huge number of corpses as currently, with the daily average now 35 to 50 corpses per day. Before the U.S.-led coalition invasion of Iraq and toppling of Saddam Hussein in 2003, the Institute used to receive only 7 to 10 corpses per day. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
While it's not on the front page, the genocide in Darfur, Western Sudan continues. Rapes and other physical attacks still occur regularly, and large-scale food shortages may be just around the corner. But there is something you can do to make sure the U.S. government takes action to end this nightmare. Over 1,000 people have made the pledge to call or email the White House every weekday until President Bush ensures the deployment of 44,000 peacekeeping troops in Darfur. Give a voice to your conscience. Visit DarfurPledge.org.
At least 4 clients of the lobbying firm Copeland, Lowry, Jacques, Denton, and White have been subpoenaed by a federal grand jury in Los Angeles as part of a probe of Representative Jerry Lewis, Republican of California, the chairman of the powerful House Appropriations Committee. Federal investigators are looking into the ties between Lewis and former Representative Bill Lowry, Republican of California, a partner in Copeland Lowry, and are focusing at this point chiefly on Jeffrey Shockey, a deputy chief of staff for the appropriations panel who previously worked for the lobbying firm, several sources close to the probe have said. Electronic voting machines adopted widely after the disputed Florida ballot count in the 2000 presidential election are under legal attack as primary election season heats up. Lawsuits have been filed in at least 6 states, the most recent last week in Colorado, to block the purchase or use of computerized machines. Voter Action, a nonpartisan advocacy group, led the challenge filed Thursday against the state of Colorado in 9 counties as well as similar lawsuits in California and Arizona this spring and New Mexico last year. Court actions by others targeted the devices in Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. Most of the suits argue that the machines are vulnerable to software tampering, don't keep an easy recountable printed record, and may miscount, switch, or not record votes, and even add phantom votes. The mother of a man who died after being delayed for surgery is suing the Manhattan hospital that, quote, let him die, end quote, the New York Post is reporting. Livia Prieto is seeking punitive damages for the wrongful death of her son, Manny Lanza, from the hospital, as well as the three doctors who treated him. Lanza died 2 months after his surgery to relieve the swelling of his brain vessels was delayed. According to St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital's records, Lanza was waiting for Medicaid coverage to cover the cost of the surgery. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Really it is, because it's the front end of what I hope will be five wonderful nights, evenings, late afternoons, something or other, a great conversation with you all. And I think we're gonna be busy this week, because the Republicans have come out. And, you know, I try to be nice. I try to stop with the Republicans and let up a little bit and, you know, be genial and dialogue. And, you know, I can't do it. No. Not. Not when they're doing what they're doing this week in the Congress. No, sir. No, ma'am. Not no how, no way. So I have a feeling we're going to have plenty to hammer on in the next 5 days as I come to you what will be this last week here in the last little toe hills of the Appalachian Mountains in northwest Alabama, heading home to the wild, wonderful, remote, undisclosed location next weekend. And we'll be back with you from my normal spot. Well, I mean, normal's a fluid term, isn't it? In the studio. By a week from today. No, when you've got a gang of weirdos in the Senate, weirdos? Nah, bigots. Know them for what they are and call them by their names. You know, that's the way it goes with the exorcisms and things like that. You must call the demon by its name. Come at Beelzebub! And in this particular instance, the name is Bigot. Bigot Republicans. Bigot Republicans. Well, Bob, some people have a genuine No, we don't. No, we don't. That's stupid. And being as it's stupid, it's coming from the Republican Party. Because they can't, look it, last two election cycles, what are their number one issues? Big rocks in public buildings and trying to figure out whether two dudes can pick out a China pattern. Right? You know, this is leadership. This is addressing the problems of the American people? So we got that, and we got plenty of time to talk about it this evening and laugh at it. Although, you know, you laugh guardedly, I suppose, because there were once upon a time people who laughed at the little Nazis in Germany with their funny little brown shirts. Aren't they a hoot? And they killed over 6 million Jews, Roma, and homosexuals. And people did laugh at it. So, yeah, we can laugh at them this week, but we have to understand that if they get a half a chance, I mean, you know, if you want to use the United States Constitution, which was made deliberately difficult to amend, in order to marginalize and ghettoize a segment of American society, if you're willing to do it to one, what the hell else will they do it to? I mean, you do realize you could amend the Constitution to formally declare that African Americans are, as was once upon a time the case in the United States, to declare that African Americans are 4/5 of a human being. You do realize you can amend the Constitution to do that, right? Because that is what they are seeking to do with people's, God almighty, sex lives. But that, you know, that's not all. I gotta tell you, I consider that going home to the remote undisclosed location in the wild, wonderful hills and hollers of West Virginia will be, to a certain extent, a return to normalcy for me. Because, you know, I'll go back to getting my copy of the Charleston Gazette every day. And my copy of the Charleston Gazette will have news in it. I'm not going to have the Tri-Cities Daily to look into every day and see headlines on the, below the fold, mind you, on the front page. 6/06/06/06. Is it the day of the beast? This newspaper is owned by the New York Times, for God's sakes. Front page news. Is it the day of the beast? There's an abundance of news out there, even though it is a Monday, and I realize that you know, God only knows who puts together the Monday issue on Sunday there in the newsroom. But I'm not gonna have that up in the land of the normal. And you know, do we go into the discussion about what it means? 6/06/06. Do we explain to the editors at the Tricycle Daily that it couldn't possibly be the day of the beast because back when St. John the Divine was having his really divine hallucinations, that the calendar that presages June the 6th, 2006, had not yet been put in place. That's a seminal question. You know, most of us, I think, let the religious weirdos go on, believe they're really weird, bizarre, and we never confront them. Is that the right policy to take? Look what leaving them to their weirdness gets you. That we have a war in Iraq that we cannot get out of. We have inflation on its way back. We have literally tens of millions of Americans who can't go to the doctor when they're sick and cannot get their medicines that they need to save their lives. We have an entire class of human beings who are abused as a matter of course in their attempts to work and stay alive. And the Republican Senate is debating who can marry whom and pick out a China pattern and the right way to think about a flag while it's on fire. I'll explain more about this. This is leadership? I somehow don't think so. Tell you what, your phone calls, you know. I mean, it's Monday. Haven't heard from you for several days. Look forward to hearing from you. Your phone calls are the biggest part of this program. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Learn it, know it, use it. Email comes to bob@headonradio.com. Get with the program, as the saying goes. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
The major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show. When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. Or have you ever sung Happy Birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning!
Happy Birthday is copyrighted, so if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties, or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money, and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
I'm a new mother. My baby and I are healthy and happy. But I was shocked to learn that every minute a woman somewhere in the world dies in pregnancy or childbirth. When women can't plan when to get pregnant, or even how many children to have, it puts them and their babies at risk. We can lower these risks for just pennies a day. I'm proud that our government supports programs that help mothers and their families around the world. If you are too, call your U.S. senators and representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support U.S. assistance for voluntary family planning programs worldwide. That's 202-224-3121. For the cost of the pennies we see lying on our sidewalks, we can make a real difference. This message brought to you by Population Action International.
In Kosovo, the U.S. government has provided over 292 million ounces of $70 million U.S. government assistance package for Central America in response to Hurricane Mitch.
Sometimes it seems like we spend an awful lot of our tax money helping people in other countries. But in reality, it's less than 1% of our government's annual budget. Our aid programs save lives by helping couples plan their families, immunizing children against deadly diseases, and ensuring that people have safe drinking water. It's important that these programs continue. Helping create a healthy and secure future for people in developing countries helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. senators and representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121. This message brought to you by Population Action International.
Welcome back. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, Monday night, the 5th day of June. 06-06-06. Is it the day of the beast? Holy cow. Oh, it's just too good. That's tomorrow. I've been hearing that Al-Qaeda has big plans for 06-06-06, because after all, they're really knee-deep in the hoopla when it comes to post-Pauline fake Christian apocrypha, right? Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Andrew is with us, calling from New York State. Hey, Andrew, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Yeah, I think I'm all right.
Yeah. Well, the whole anti-gay marriage amendment, I mean, can you get a bigger piece of cheesecloth to try and cover up everything else that they don't want to deal with, you know? I mean, come on, Spector. I mean, this is pandering to the lowest of the low. I mean, this is just bigoted, hate-mongering, distraction, just garbage. But it's not even a distraction anymore, because most people know that it's just BS. And like you said.
See, Andrew, honest to God, I believe that if they could get away with it, they'd have we'd be debating a Jew marriage amendment.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Or a miscegenation amendment.
Oh, hateful amendments. That's all. That's all they know.
Yeah.
Hate. Warmongering hate, greed for their little minions, and that's it. They're just a waste of a human being, and they should never, ever, ever, ever be allowed to have any kind of power, government power, corporate power, because they don't know how to use it. I mean, this is the ultimate example of their misuse, malfeasance, misguided agendas. They're incompetent at all levels, fiscally, civically, internationally.
Is it a question of Andrew? Let me ask you. In all honesty, is it a question of competence, or is it a question of
consciousness too?
Morality and goodwill. They have none.
Yeah, they're incompetent and malicious. And those are two things that, you know, because I mean, they have all the power now. You think they would be able to I'm glad they can't do that, you know, like they're not good at it, but they have all this power right now, and they're not smart enough to like even cover their tracks kind of well, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's just they're just brazen about it, just like,
well,
we're just gonna let it hang out. And,
would it be worthwhile to play their game a little bit, Andrew? Would it be worthwhile to say, you know, if maybe we had a Democrat senator with a whole bunch of stones, and say that Democratic senator introduced a constitutional amendment that we could debate alongside this marriage amendment that said fornication shall be a capital offense in the United States, and then watch the Republicans run like hell?
Yeah, they would run like heck, because they're some of the biggest fornicators in the business. I mean, hey, it cuts fornications with everybody. Nobody's above that, you know. That happens to the best of us and the worst of us, you know. It is what it is. And these people try to come up like they're high and mighty and, you know, got God on their side and all of this and that. And they're the biggest hypocrites on the planet. I mean, it's farce. It's just utter farce.
I mean, yeah, it's the reduction of the American Republic, this bold and brilliant experiment, flawed though it may have been. It's the reduction of it to an absolute joke.
Yeah, a joke. And that's what it is. It's a bad joke. And we got to get these people out, you know?
Well, we do. The question is, you know, the thing that still scares me, Andrew, I don't mean to be Mr. Negative or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we had a national referendum and everybody in the nation could vote on every single member of Congress, I think you'd see a healthy wholesale turnover, and it might not even be possible to keep a Republican in the buildings. But, you know, the thing is, Sam Brownback, is gonna go back to Kansas, where people think that he has the ear of Jesus.
Yeah, well, he's got the ear of something, but I don't think it's Jesus. not in the at least the way that I know of Jesus, what I've read, my little understanding of the Bible. But it's just, you know, I'm afraid that, you know, the midterm elections is just going to be more of the same hanky panky going on, and you know they're not going to leave office. They don't want to leave office because they know if they leave office, they're going to be toast. I mean, if we get some real oversight in there, in government, I mean, these people are going to be brought up on war crimes and corruption and everything else, you know?
Well, I'd like to think so. I don't necessarily know that it'll go that far. God knows I wish it would. But we are at a critical turning point in our history. And I think beginning with 2002, we need in terms of framing and in terms of discussion, we need to start talking about these elections for what they have really been. 2002, 2004, 2006, 2008, these are all regularly scheduled American IQ tests.
Yes, they are. Yeah, they are. They are IQ tests. And right now, I mean, even though there's hanky-panky going on, we failed. I mean, 2002... The IQ, you know, the people that came out and voted, and they bought into the Bushko mantra and all his, you know, warmongering. I mean, come on. It's like people got to wake up. And I don't know what it's going to take, because people are starting to, you know, to feel it in their pocketbooks now as far as the economy is going. I mean, the economy is not good. I mean, I have for sale signs going up around in where I live. I mean, whew. On one of the more, you know, the town where I live in, the side where there's usually the money, there are a lot of for sale signs going up big time. I mean, it's like every day I go there, it's like every other house, there's like a for sale sign. So, I mean, people are...
And, I mean, is this people who can't keep up with the mortgage now?
Pretty much, because they got into those big houses with those adjustables, you know? And, I mean, with the price of food, energy costs, I mean, everything else, you know, job insecurity. I mean, I think people are trying to bail while they can bail. And with the refis and the remortgage, you know, they took out all those loans and went out and bought brand new cars with them or whatever, or did some improvements on the house. I mean, these people are strapped, you know.
Yeah.
It's the have it, we got to have it now mentality that's got everybody caught out there, and those interest rates. You know, those low interest rates and all of that crap, that was just, you know, that was just bait. I mean, that's what was fueling the economy. So,
yeah.
Bushko knew what they were doing with those low interest rates. So.
Well, everything they do, Andrew, has been geared toward...
Calculate.
Oh, boy, I'm going to get in trouble again. it's a junkie mentality.
Yeah.
It's stuff for now, and we'll worry about what happens later. Yeah. Later, like the tax cuts, we're not really going to feel the full effect of George Bush's tax cuts until around 2012, and then all hell's going to break loose.
Yeah, exactly. And
if we don't get serious and get sober.
Yeah, and it's, you know, that's true, because, you know, people are feeling the pinch around here now. They're talking about how they can, you know, they can't afford to send their kids to, you know, summer camp. Neighborhoods are getting together trying to say, hey, maybe you can take a couple of days off here. You take which week you're going to be off or whatever, you know, because
yeah.
Can't afford to send their kids to summer camp because, you know, the taxes keep going up and everything's sky high.
Yeah, the state and local taxes have to go up because the federal taxes went down and it's got to be paid for.
Yeah, those, you know, the old tax shift's starting to kick in. And with all that refi debt that's hanging, and those adjustable rate mortgages are going to start kicking in. They're starting to kick in. People are feeling it now.
Exactly.
And then when you, like you said, in God forbid, 2012, when all that, you know, when the chickens really come home to roost, that's just going to pull the rug from under it. And then, I don't know, you can take your dollar bill and use them as Charmin, because it'll be game over.
Well, you know, I used to watch back in the late 70s, there was a lot of this apocalyptic stuff going on, and frankly, I paid attention to some of it and watched some for fun, thinking they were crazy. I'm not so sure they were crazy anymore.
No, me neither.
You know we may have a financial Armageddon in this country, because a financial Armageddon is what has been planned.
Exactly. And that's where I'm at. And that's what I'm looking at. And you know, it's almost like you can say, like, oh, you see the writing on the wall. But, I mean, I was talking about this for, you know, the last, like, 3 years. And I'm like, I'm seeing everybody, you know, like, taking out home mortgage loans, going out, paying cash for a brand-new car. I'm like, what are you doing? I mean, first of all, car is the worst investment you can make. And secondly, why are you mortgaging your house out? I was like, yeah, the market's fine right now, but when it corrects, it's going to correct. And you're going to have all this debt on you, and your house ain't going to be worth as much, and you're going to be stuck. And if you can't make the payments, hey, guess what? The bank's going to come take it. And everything else, and you're still going to own the bankrupt.
Andrew, there's a guy around here. I listened to him on one of the talk radio stations. My general objection to him is that he's a religion industry type because he talks about getting financially clean through the grace of Jesus Christ, and you know that just kind of get. But he does say something from time to time that makes sense to me, and that is having a paid off home mortgage is the new BMW.
Yeah,
it's the new status symbol.
It is,
and those people who have those paid off home mortgages. And have busted their rear ends to do it and have stayed out of the restaurants and have, you know, and don't have the new Escalade in the driveway with the Jesus fish on the back and all of that. They're going to be the new wealth class.
Yeah, they are, because at least they're going to, you know, they're going to have to deal with their taxes. But other than that, I mean, they are will be the new wealth class because having a roof over your head is going to be the, you know, the wealth status.
Exactly. Well, Andrew, so good to hear from you. So good to be back this evening and get a chance to talk to you. We're at the bottom of the hour and got to break away.
All right.
But, you know, hang in there, man, and just, you know, thanks to you for paying attention to your world.
I try to. And I try to, you know, help people, and, you know, I try to have conversations with people about things like that because they need to know.
And I think you're right. We you know, that was the question I put earlier. Most of the time we let the weirdos walk around saying, yeah, it's the calendar. Tomorrow's a dangerous day. You know, I think you and I are in agreement. We're reaching a point where we've got to reach out to these people. You know, try to be nice the first time through. The second time through, we call them dumbasses. But, you know.
I have a couple of those that I've written off. But for the most part, people, you know, if they're receptive, they'll listen. And they'll understand if you put it in layman's terms.
Exactly. Andrew, have a great evening, all right?
You too.
Take care.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye now. Can we do that? Can we do we have enough guts to look at people and confront them on these issues? Because I think if we're going to make any, we got to. More phone calls after the break. 877, the number 4, head on 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
And so I followed the man. When there was earth to plow, or guns to bear, I was always there, right there on the chart.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. When he was about to run for president the first time around, Bush confided to a friend that he was under pressure from James Dobson and other right-wing evangelicals to go after gays and lesbians. Bush assured his friend, "I'm not going to kick gays." But that was then, and this is now. And now the Republicans have nothing else to run on, so Bush is kicking away. In his radio address last Saturday, Bush threw his support behind a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage. He railed against activist judges in several states, including Massachusetts, and he denounced local officials in, yeah, you bet, San Francisco. Marriage, he insisted, cannot be cut off from its cultural, religious, and natural roots. But it's not up to the government to defend marriage as a religious institution. That's up to the church, or the mosque, or the synagogue. It is up to the government, however, to see that we don't have second-class citizens in this country, and that we don't discriminate against people for who they are. And that's just what this amendment will do. We've never amended the Constitution to deny rights to a specific group of people. There's no reason to start now. Bush ended his radio address with a call to tolerance, respect, and dignity. But by backing the ban on gay marriage, he's fomenting a lack of tolerance. He's legislating disrespect, and he's stripping millions of Americans of their dignity. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
To tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right there on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run.
Yeah, brother, can you spare a dime? We may be coming to a point where we talk about where that becomes a legitimate anthem for the early part of the century. Did you catch that one lyric? That's Mandy Patinkin, by the way. What a brilliant performer he is. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always right there. Welcome to working class America. You know, hasn't it always been this way? If there's real work to be done to the Rockefellers and the Carnegies and the Mellons and the Fricks, did they do the real work? Hell no! No, you and me. We're going to be the ones who affect change. And possibly sometimes to the consternation of the Mellons and the Fricks and the Fords and the Carnegies. Right. Let's go straight to the phones. Andy is joining us from the UK. Andy, welcome. So good to talk to you.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Going well. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, actually. It's been really nice and sunny over here, so it's pretty good. Good weekend.
Spring's coming to Wales?
No, we miss spring. It's summer now.
Oh, well.
Yeah, we do that.
Just shoot right past.
Yeah, we miss spring. We get autumn from November till June. Pretty much.
Sort of like old American Northwest.
Well, yeah, I guess so, yeah, because we, I mean, in Cardiff down here, I mean, it's not so much further north in Wales. If you go 50 miles up the road or even 40 miles up the road, it's snow all winter, but down here you might get a little bit of slush if you're lucky, but it's generally just rain.
But you've got green and blooming and beautiful and... Kind of lifts your spirits, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, no, it's good stuff. All the insects are out of the garden's lovely. So, yeah, no, it's nice. But, no, on to more real, well, important in some way things, although the garden is important. But, no, the utter chaos that is your country. Did you know that there are 8,000 soldiers AWOL from your army?
I had read something about that somewhere. Sort of camped out in Canada, are they?
Yeah, most of them in Toronto.
Yeah, these aren't people who, like, you know, were evading the draft like in Vietnam. These were people who joined up and went, whoa, I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of them was on BBC Newsnight, which, go to the website. Everyone should go to bbc.co.uk/newsnight, and they show the previous night's Newsnight. And it's a 50-minute program, so it's not exactly a huge amount of time out of your life. And you should definitely have a look through that, because it's normally fairly good. They very often have international stories that are, well, normally America or something that America's done, you know. They had this story about these guys, and one of the boys decided he was heading to Canada when his sergeant, he'd just come back and was taking them out for another tour, showed him photos of himself and other Marines lighting their cigarettes off a burning Iraqi corpse.
Say again.
He decided he wasn't going to Iraq when he saw his sergeant, who showed them pictures of what it was like out there, and he showed them a picture of himself, the sergeant, and a load of other Marines. I think they were Marines. They might have been infantry, but I'm pretty sure they were Marines, lighting their cigarettes off a burning Iraqi corpse.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, God. And, well, I saw there's something out today, and I haven't seen the website, so I hesitate to mention the name of the site, but it's something called thewartapes.com.
Right.
And these are diary entries and video footage, things like that,
yeah,
of the Iraqi experience.
Yeah.
And I did see one clip of a kid. You know, and these are kids, Andy.
Yeah.
These are in many instances, you know, late teenagers, early 20s, people who have no business making decisions about life or death for anyone, let alone themselves.
Yeah. They don't understand death.
Right, and they're sitting. I saw where one said, "Well, you know, we call them Haji. In Vietnam, they called them Gooks, but I'm sure they've got a name just like that for us."
Yeah, it's called murdering American pigs, and that's exactly
infidel. But you know, American. God, it pains me so much, Andy, to say it. American covers it.
Mm. Nowadays, it does. Yeah, I mean. The problem is that, you know, pretty much everybody around the world is smart enough to work out that an American citizen is not necessarily represented by the American government. And now, I think pretty much everyone's realized the American citizen isn't represented by their government. And the actions of the military are basically the organized violence of the government. And so if they're acting like common criminals, then what does it tell you about the people who are in charge of them? I mean, you know, look, we've got SAS dudes, right? These people are the elite, and they're quitting because they will not work with Americans.
Right.
And they.
Yeah, we talked about that one story, what, 3 or 4 months ago?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, Mr. Griffin.
Yeah.
He was.
And, I mean, we're not talking about some mincing peacenik.
No, he was in the SAS. I mean, you know, you want hard, that's the hardest. End of, do you know what I mean? There are no arguments. The SAS train everybody, and they simply will not work with the American, you know, plenty of SAS troopers are just getting out, and you know, some of them are resigning. Simple as that, you know. Most of them are waiting for the end of that tour, but some of them simply can't cope with what the Americans are doing. I mean, it comes down to the way that the American government, American army fights wars, and that is just disproportionate response of power. You know, someone shoots an AK-47 at the Marines in the convoy, and they turn around a whole bunch of heavy machine guns and M-16s and open fire. And I mean, you've seen the pictures. They all stand in a row behind a wall and take it in turns to just empty their magazines into the landscape. I mean, first of all, what the hell are they hitting?
Yeah, right.
And secondly, if they do hit anything, what's it going to be? Civilians. You know, in their houses, going, oh, God, the Americans are shooting the landscape up again. The bunch of bullets come through the wall. Because those walls are only made of, like, most of them are made of mud. They're mud brick.
Yeah.
They don't stop high-velocity rounds, especially ones with uranium, like, jacketing on them. So it doesn't achieve anything except make everybody know that when some person takes a pot shot or a bomb goes off, then the Americans are going to just open up. And now the Iraqis know that there's a very good chance the Americans might come and kick the door down and just kill everyone.
Yeah, right down to the babies.
Right down to the babies, you know, check them all. Oh, they all appear dead. Right, let's go and tell them that a roadside bomb blew them up.
Yeah, that was a 3-year-old insurgent.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've said for a long time, Andy, that there is a racial component to this war.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to understand that there are people in the United States, and Thank God that I don't run across them very often. But, you know, a very brief web search will reveal them to you. There are people out there that are okay with shooting three-year-olds because they feel like nits make lice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you know how I feel about those sort of people. I'm quite happy to shoot them. Give me a gun. You know, people who need to be thinned from the herd, essentially, that lot are. But it's that mentality that's caused us so many problems in the past, that insane sort of, for some reason, just because we happen to be a bit paler than other people, we're allowed to go around blowing them all up.
You know, I mean, no offense, man, but it was your countrymen from a century ago who coined the phrase white man's burden.
Yeah. But I don't think even they had any... I mean, they were despicable human beings, but even they were not what we have now. I mean, what we have now are the... I mean, it's hard to even find examples from history for this sort of insanity. I mean, it's even worse than Hitler, and that's bad to say. But, I mean, Hitler put people to work that he could use, and he was a despicable human being and would never want anything as bad as him again. But the thing is, these people are worse, because... they wouldn't even put human beings to use. They'd simply exterminate them all. You know? And
yeah, and the manifest incompetence that comes along with it. You know, do you remember?
Stupid and evil, remember?
Yeah, stupid and evil. Absolutely. Because if you recall, Andy, all those speeches where we had Dear Leader talking about... we invaded Iraq because Saddam was an evil man and he killed his own people. Well, you know, 50 people in dummied-up Iraqi police uniforms weren't rounding up busloads of people and saying, are you Kurdish, are you Shia, or are you Sunni? And the minute they had them all segregated, everybody who said Kurd or Shia got shot. That didn't happen in Saddam's Iraq.
No, but...
he stayed on in Saddam's Iraq. Women didn't have to wear those... headscarves in Saddam's Iraq.
Well, it comes back to Saddam was a bastard, but he was our bastard.
Yeah, so was Manuel Noriega.
Absolutely. But, you know, none of it matters to Negroponte and people like him because they're the enforcers for people like Bush and Reagan and Bush. And you know, nobody can tell me that when Negroponte turns up somewhere on behalf of the American government and then within months, normally within a month, death squads appear. No one can tell me that's a coincidence. The guy's a killer. He's a killer. And he organizes...
that's what he does.
...massive scale. It's what he does. He kills people. And if you look at his eyes, he's got the eyes of death, just like Dick Cheney has. Have you seen Frank Luntz's eyes recently? See if you can get some footage of Frank Luntz. He's interviewed on Newsnight a lot, and you know how he was like the one the architect of the skies and all that. Well, he's now going, global warming's real. They shouldn't still be arguing things that are 6 years old now. Honest, it's not my fault. And his eyes look like somebody who's looked into the depths of hell. You know.
Well, yeah. This is Lee Atwater on his deathbed, kind of regretting doing the whole Willie Horton thing and begging forgiveness.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
when they start smelling the brimstone, they do kind of come to understand.
Oh well, yeah, but it's always too late by then, isn't it?
Yeah,
and that's the problem. It might be too late for us. I mean, you know, people go on about global warming might be getting somewhere near the point of critical mass. Well, I put it to everyone that it's already past the point, and unless we find some technological way of reducing it below it, we're all stuffed. And I mean that because the scientists that have been on about this for a while have said the critical point was past 350 parts per million, and we went past that a while ago.
Well, all these fools who say, well, you know, it's all ginned up, it's overreaction, it's just scare tactics, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's one question that does them in every time, Andy, and it's this: what if they're right?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, I find it even hard to talk to people that simply won't accept it because, you know, time after time, you guys have an excuse. You're simply uninformed because your media make it that way. And a lot of people don't have web access. A lot of people don't have access to decent newspapers. And that's a big problem. Over here in Europe, we've still got people who are, oh, I don't believe it. And, you know, it's not like... like we haven't been told. I mean, when I was in school, we were told that there was this thing that was called global warming that was going on. And that was 10 years ago now. I finished school. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, people still don't get it over here. I mean, we just had a program called Panorama Run, which was literally about how the Bush regime have manipulated climate change science.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically was following the progress of a report and what happened to it. And, you know, it's basically like we've got, well, the Americans have got that island that's up in Alaska somewhere you've got that's just literally disappearing, which means he's got to move. I can't remember the name of it. But these people have been there for like 4,000 or 5,000 years or something, and they've got to move because we've melted their island and it's literally slipping into the sea. And so the second group of refugees from global warming will be Americans. Yeah? The first
yeah.
was some group of poor islanders that have had to move off their island already in the Pacific, and the second group are Americans. Alaskans, admittedly, but they're still Americans. And,
yeah.
you know, the reports that the scientists who studied this community, studied the science around the whole of Alaska, studied the whole Arctic, for God's sake, they produced these reports saying, you know, human activity is contributing to global warming, and that is was changed to a maybe. You know, any definitive statement in the entire report was changed to a maybe, could be,
yeah.
potentially. And it was changed yeah. by a bunch of right-wing evangelists, what do you call them? Graduates of that crazy college down south somewhere. I can't remember what it's called, but it looks insane. A bunch of Christians stood around singing songs about how much they love Jesus, and then they get jobs in the FBI and lobbying firms.
Oh, yeah, Patrick Henry University.
That's the one, yeah, yeah. Well, apparently the people that did the editing were very connected to, some of them were graduates of that, and the other ones were graduates of the oil industry. So,
no,
you know.
God, well, you know, under the broad general heading of evil and stupid.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the problem is they think they can get away with it forever, and what they don't understand is they might get away with it from us. We might not be able to stop them, and I, you know, hope we can, but we might not be able to. But what they can't get away from is what will happen, which is oblivion. And their families will be destroyed too.
Oh, yeah.
There will be no more bloodlines of theirs, of their wonderful, highly bred aristocratic nonsense for them to carry on with. They won't be able to do it. Their kids will die.
Well, you know, when you think about where a lot of the wealth is concentrated, it's concentrated in places that are that could conceivably be underwater in the next 25 years.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I love about the American government's we will not do anything to harm our economy with climate change treaties. Well, what's going to happen to the economy? I say it every time. What's going to happen to the economy when Washington, New York, L.A., Boston, Philadelphia, Miami, New Orleans, well, hell, even Houston probably. What's going to happen when
you know, it all begs a question, Andy. You remember, I'm sure you remember your Monty Python and the Holy Grail, right?
Yeah.
Remember Swamp Castle?
yeah.
Told me it was daft to build a castle in a swamp, but I built it anyway. It sank into the swamp. Look.
Yeah.
New York, Boston, Charleston, Norfolk, Philly, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Miami, Mobile, New Orleans, Houston. It's all Swamp Castle, Andy.
I know. I mean, the sighting of every major American city in the last 100 years has been insane. San Francisco? You've avoided swamp. You've managed to get right on top of a fault. I mean, literally right on top of a fault. I mean, you couldn't have put it any better if you tried. Do you know what I mean?
That's the thing. I understand when you're first colonizing a place, you really don't think about where you're putting the town. But, you know, after you've had 100 years, yeah, maybe you think about it.
A couple of times.
Oh, mercy. Well, we've got to roll on, Andy. So good to talk to you. Sorry we weren't here Friday. We sure missed you.
No, well, that's not your problem. Verizon should pay for that.
Maybe.
Well,
we're going to work on that. But don't jinx us. It's working, man. It's working.
Cool. Well, I'll speak to you at the end of the week anyway, and take care, man.
All right. Later.
Later.
Bye now.
Bye.
That's our pal Andy from Cardiff in Wales in the UK. I think it's important for us to, you know, for people to hear how folks elsewhere think, because as our good friend Robert in Japan has pointed out from time to time, you get a different view of the United States when you're turning around looking back at it. You know, when you're sitting here and you got a steady diet of CNN and Fox News and Headline News and Glenn Beck, it's a little different. Let's go to the phones real quick. Steady is joining us and has waited a long time, calling from Southern California. Steady, welcome to the show.
Hey,
how you doing?
Head on radio chat room. Love you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Well, we're doing okay here, holding down the fort. We just had thanks, Bruce, for last night's time, and we had an interesting development today before our court date tomorrow, and that's regarding Miss Myrtle Hunnell. And for anyone who hasn't followed it, I'm a caretaker, and the daughter has come over and taken her out of here just now, and Pat and I are just sitting here going, oh my God, she picked up her mother's cane and tried to make it sound, you know, tried to make it, I don't know, made it look like I was assaulting her, tried to come up some big flurry and get her mother all worked up, and now they're out to dinner. And it's, you know, court's tomorrow. It's just, I am throwing the details out to the court of public opinion here because I don't know what's going to happen. I'm prepared for just about anything that could happen, and based on what happened
Steady,
today. Yes.
Steady, how solid is Miss Myrtle, for lack of a better term, mentally?
I would say in a stable, calm, quiet environment, which has been the home that I've provided or maintained, should I say, for the last 3.5 years with her dog and her meals and medicine and all the things just going a little stable. She can walk a mile and walk her dog and answer questions about her past and share memories. But as far as remembering details of dates and times and things like that, they just they've been manipulating that. She has a lack of memory in that area. Her memory does not serve her as well as it did even when I got here.
Steady, I say that because don't be surprised if you show up for court tomorrow and find a brand new power of attorney and a couple of other documents dropped in front of you.
I'm preparing mentally for that, and the disconnect emotionally is very difficult because my mother died like 8 years ago, however this turns out, has been a rite of passage in taking care of our older generation and respecting our older generation, and really the more important issue here is the future of our older generation and the assets of our older generation and who's in control of those assets and what do they think that those assets are supposed to be for. Can a 92-year-old woman make a decision for herself? Can it be afforded in the court that she made a decision to trust somebody and that somebody has been of good character and met her needs well? Or is it in the position where the courts ultimately decide for everyone and useless eaters will be handled this way and people who try to get in the way of our mission for useless eaters will be handled in another? I am anxious to report not only the results of our primary election here tomorrow in California, but of the proceedings of this court case, specifically in Ventura Superior Court jurisdiction. It's not a coincidence in any way. And we filed a document of domestic partnership with Secretary of State Bruce McPherson, and I know that is throw a little monkey wrench into their planning of legal maneuvering. You know, they're going to have to work around that one. But here's an appropriate application of a one-page document which gets away from the fees and myriads of professional titled people who cost $300 an hour saying what is best for this situation and absolutely have come up with solutions that destroy, kill, and steal and don't provide protection for adults or human services in any way that represents good. I mean,
well, it's sad, Steady. I hope tomorrow evening you'll call in and update us on all of this. We've got a
Okay.
Please let us know how it shakes out.
Sure thing. Sure thing, man. I'll do that. Thanks, Bob and Agnes and Head On Radio. Love you.
And thanks, Arbor. Man.
Hiya.
Hey, Arbor.
We're
later, guys.
We're enjoying the tent. We're actually taking a moment to sort of allow things to unfold the way that they are going to unfold.
Cool. Very cool. Okay. We'll talk to you both tomorrow evening, all right?
You got it.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And, yeah, quickly to the top of the hour news. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. The Senate today debated the Marriage Protection Amendment, a proposal that appeals mainly to those who would limit marriage to heterosexual couples and would define in a constitutional amendment an issue that is largely religious in nature. Senator Sam Brownback, Republican of Kansas, likened marriage to the defense of democracy.
A functioning marriage culture serves to protect political liberty and foster limited government.
According to the latest counts, the Republicans do not have enough votes to actually pass this amendment. The Pentagon has decided to omit from new detainee policies a key tenet of the Geneva Convention that explicitly bans, quote, humiliating and degrading treatment, end quote, according to knowledgeable military officials. A step that would mark a further, potentially permanent shift away from strict adherence to international human rights standards. The decision could culminate a lengthy debate within the Defense Department, but will not become final until the Pentagon makes new guidelines public, a step that has been delayed. However, the State Department fiercely opposes the military's decision to exclude Geneva Convention protections and has been pushing for the Pentagon and White House to reconsider. The Defense Department officials acknowledged. Every morning, as ambulance cars and police vehicles rush to the hospital in Bab al-Mahdum, carrying corpses of unidentified victims, a queue of women, teenagers, and elderly men forms in front of the morgue as people search for their relatives, fearing they might be found among the bodies. Usually one of their family members is lost or kidnapped by gunmen and then turns up after a week or so later as a corpse with gunshot wounds to the body. A further victim in the latest wave of sectarian violence or civil war that has swept through Iraq in recent months. Iraq's main morgue had never received that huge number of corpses on a daily basis, not since modern Iraq was established in the 1920s. According to statistics by Iraq's Morgues Institute, 6,002 corpses were found in the past 5 months, 1,068 in January, 1,110 in February, 1,294 in March, 1,155 in April, and 1,375 in May. Most of the corpses had gunshot wounds, while others showed marks of burns or electrocution. Morgues Institute officials said that since the Institute was established in 1927, it had never received such a huge number of corpses as currently, with the daily average now 35 to 50 corpses per day. Before the U.S.-led coalition invasion of Iraq and toppling of Saddam Hussein in 2003, the Institute used to receive only 7 to 10 corpses per day. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
While it's not on the front page, the genocide in Darfur, Western Sudan continues. Rapes and other physical attacks still occur regularly, and large-scale food shortages may be just around the corner. But there is something you can do to make sure the U.S. government takes action to end this nightmare. Over 1,000 people have made the pledge to call or email the White House every weekday until President Bush ensures the deployment of 44,000 peacekeeping troops in Darfur. Give a voice to your conscience. Visit DarfurPledge.org.
At least 4 clients of the lobbying firm Copeland, Lowry, Jaquez, Denton and White have been subpoenaed by a federal grand jury in Los Angeles as part of a probe of Representative Jerry Lewis, Republican of California, the chairman of the powerful House Appropriations Committee. Federal investigators are looking into the ties between Lewis and former Representative Bill Lowry, Republican of California, a partner in Copeland Lowry, and are focusing at this point chiefly on Jeffrey Shockey, a deputy chief of staff for the appropriations panel who previously worked for the lobbying firm, several sources close to the probe have said. Electronic voting machines adopted widely after the disputed Florida ballot count in the 2000 presidential election are under legal attack as primary election season heats up. Lawsuits have been filed in at least six states, the most recent last week in Colorado, to block the purchase or use of computerized machines. Voter Action, a nonpartisan advocacy group, led the challenge filed Thursday against the state of Colorado in nine counties, as well as similar lawsuits in California and Arizona this spring and New Mexico last year. Court actions by others targeted the devices in Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. Most of the suits argue that the machines are vulnerable to software tampering, don't keep an easy recountable printed record, and may miscount, switch, or not record votes, and even add phantom votes. The mother of a man who died after being delayed for surgery is suing the Manhattan hospital that, quote, let him die, end quote, the New York Post is reporting. Livia Prieto is seeking punitive damages for the wrongful death of her son, Manny Lanza, from the hospital, as well as the three doctors who treated him. Lanza died 2 months after his surgery to relieve the swelling of his brain vessels was delayed. According to St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital's records, Lanza was waiting for Medicaid coverage to cover the cost of the surgery. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, that little dust up, that little confrontation with the facts. Head On, it's me, I'm Bob. Great, great, great to be back on this Monday evening. Love Monday. Because, especially, you know, with the Verizon stuff and everything, it's been kind of frustrating. But, boy, you know, God knows we came back right at the perfect moment because it's not, you know, Mom, they're doing it again. Damn Republicans. Let's go to the phones. David joins us from Middle Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Well, good evening, Bob. Good evening, Bob.
So, how are you?
Well, I'm quite well, and then it's beautiful here, and I just heard from Agnes it's rainy and stormy like it was here 12 or so hours ago. She doesn't have long to wait, and it'll be nice. Just be patient. Be patient. I called in about Kansas politics and how it is a glimmer of light, you know, at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a freight train, but first I want all you right-wingers that are out there listening, I want all of you that still are, you know, still think that Bush vote has a warm fuzzy for you, I want you to please remember, based on just those numbers, at the Baghdad morgue, I want you to please remember that under Saddam Hussein, there were 10 or so deaths a day, and now there are 35. A day. So in George Bush's Iraq, you're 3.5 times more likely to turn up dead. In George Bush's Iraq, you're 3.5 times more likely to turn up dead. So who's the bad leader that needs to be toppled?
Well, you know, yeah. And among other things, David, In Saddam's Iraq, and by entering into this topic, we'll take it as read. Saddam was an evil man.
Of course, he was. You could flush your toilet and turn on your lights.
You could flush your toilet, you could turn on your lights, the refrigerator still worked, and yes, you would get dead if you stood up and said, Saddam is an evil man, we need to get rid of Saddam, and Saddam is bad, down with Saddam, all of that stuff. You would get dead.
You wouldn't, however, get dead
for going to the post office.
If you just took the lowest entry-level membership, subscribed to the Boff Party magazine, you could get a job that would let your family eat, and your toilet would flush, your refrigerator was on 24 hours a day, and you wouldn't get killed going to the post office unless you have a Saddam Sucks T-shirt on. So,
right. And who in his right mind does that?
Well, they learned those rules a long, long time ago. The Iraqis are bright people. It didn't take them long at all. Gee whiz, honey, why don't we go out in the backyard and burn the Saddam Sucks T-shirt, and you can have a job, and I won't be a widow, and the refrigerator will stay on. Got it, sweetheart.
Well, and see, David, the thing that just drives me batty out of all this, do you remember Marshall Tito?
Vividly.
Marshall Tito ran Yugoslavia, of course, which was that wasn't even a real country. It was Montenegro. It was Kosovo. It was Bosnia Herzegovina. It was Herzegovina without the Bosnia. It was Serbia. It was Croatia, and everybody hated each other.
Yeah, let's step back just for another second, and I want to get back to Kansas, but let's do Yugoslavia. We've got Eastern Orthodox. They don't believe in the Roman Church. We've got the Roman Church. They don't believe the Eastern Orthodox have it right. And in between those nice folks are some Muslims who are pretty easygoing. And they've intermarried for 1,000 years. And they've moved around. And they all live in 3 different areas of a wonderful, wonderful area. East of Italy, north of Turkey, beautiful weather, great crops. And somebody somewhere after the First World War circled it and said, this is a country. You guys figure it out. Gee whiz. And Marshall Tito kept it somehow under an iron fist and a steel heel. Somehow he kept them from each other's throat.
Well, just, you know, and Yugoslavia and Iraq were created contemporaneously by the same genius mapmakers, because it was right after the First World War that, in the mad rush to break up the Ottoman Empire and make sure that everybody got a little piece of the pie, that we said, okay, here's some Kurds. They don't like the Shiites, and the Sunnis in the middle don't like anybody. We'll call them a country.
Precisely.
I think this is probably a function of some sort of substance abuse. Because
that area, it would have been cigars and brandy Empire? Those were 3 pretty potent drugs in about 1920, weren't they?
Yeah, and probably a little keef and a little hookah here and there, and yeah, sure.
Well, a little something on the road. You know, if it happens in Baghdad, it stays in Baghdad.
Yeah, right. But you've got there is functionally no difference between Marshall Tito and Saddam Hussein, and they both served the same function, David. They both served the same function. Marshall Tito was our buddy as long as the Soviets weren't. Saddam was our buddy as long as we had a Jones on for the Iranians.
Precisely. Tito was the greatest tightrope walker in the world. Neither anyone in the United States nor anyone in the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics could knock him off of a rope. Lord knows they tried. Well, let's go on to Kansas, shall we?
But Kansas, yes.
One of my very favorite politicians in the whole wide world, Senator Brown for Brains.
new name!
A religious nutcase of the very first order. What a boob, what a nut, with all the things in the world that need to be discussed. He's thrilled that Bruce and Ramon should be outlawed from picking a China pattern. But there is hope. There is hope for Kansas. I heard about this over the weekend. It's authenticated. Two, moderate, and I guess there might still be such things, two moderate Republicans. Let's say Reagan Republicans. You know, fiscally conservative, sort of conservative socially, but just guys that want to, like, balance budgets, have government not bug you so much. They've resigned from the Republican Party, and they're running as Democrats. In the state of Kansas, four statewide office. One of them is in the Democratic primary at the absolute utter joy of the Democratic machine, such as it is. It's missing on a few cylinders and it's got one flat tire, but it is a party. I'm sorry, it's legal. It is
sputtering along.
But the state Democratic chairman is thrilled because a guy with one of the highest name recognitions in the state of Kansas says, "I'm sorry, this is it. This business of this, we've got to teach creation. We've got to do whatever George Bush and Karl Rove say." Two very important Republicans have said, enough is more than enough. We're going to join the Democratic Party because Democrats in Kansas are much more like what they're really about now, and that means after the subversion of the hard right religious nut, Karl Rove, whatever George says. So even in a place that I've made jokes about to friends, and one of them is from Kansas, he just always told me that all his wheat farmers were too busy raising wheat in the summer and skiing in Colorado in the winter to be bothered with politics, but suddenly they're beginning to be bothered. They're actually going. These guys are going to run as Democrats to challenge these ultra-right-wing reactionary crown-another-king-named-Bush idiots. So there may be some hope. The Republicans are beginning to fracture. Well, who was that genius that said, now watch the whole thing come apart now once he's been inaugurated again?
That would be Brother Wayne.
Oh, precisely.
Exactly. And, well, you know, I make phone calls sometimes, David. Sometimes they're ill-advised phone calls, but up there in the hills and hollers of the undisclosed location, there's a really wonderful brand of flour called Hudson Cream. I don't know if you've ever seen it there in Tennessee. Great flour. Wonderful bread flour.
I'm sure we haven't because your mule train can't come this far.
Yeah, I know. Well, on the back of it,
Sorry about that.
That's okay. On the back of it, it says, from the land of Kansas. So I did a little digging around. I got the phone number for Hudson Cream. And I called out there and I said, you know, I love your flour, but I got to quit using it. Why? What's wrong? Did you find something in it? Did you find something in it? No, ma'am. No mice. No mice effluvia.
No.
But you people out in Kansas are crazy, and I'm afraid it's going to affect my family if I use your flour, because it's in your water supply or your air or your wheat or something. You people are nuts. What do you mean? You want to teach your children that miracles make math happen? She goes, oh no. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. You're poisoning the body politic of the United States with people like Sam Brownback. And she goes, oh, him.
See? There's hope.
There is hope. But, you know, crazy people. Now, I hope they are coming around. I really want them to. I'd like them to enter the dialogue. It's like, I had a little fun the other night with our buddies John Fox and Bruce Birch. I'm going to kind of miss being down here, David, because you just don't get journalism and you just don't get political advertising like this just everywhere.
On the bottom half of the front page, is the beast taking over? Or that's a paraphrase, of course, but, you know, no, you're not going
to. Is 06-06-06 the day of the beast?
I wouldn't put that
in the F section in front of the used car ads if I was an editor.
That should be in a handout on a single fold, 8.5 by 11 that was next to the dryers in the laundromat.
I was thinking the chick publication on top of the urinal in the men's room at the rest area, but same thing.
No, the laundromat would be a better spot. There'd be too many odd phone numbers scribbled on it if it were at that spot you described.
But you get my meaning. I'm going to miss this.
Oh, I'm sure you are. But believe me, if you work enough, you'll be able to. I tell you what, I'll make sure that when and where, as I can, I try to send you some stuff. And for all of those that might be, I've been impatient from time to time. I had a call that I thought was just, borderline poetry, and I wanted to get it through. By golly, we all need to be just a trifle patient because, Lord, the stuff that we can depend on that we know really matters, like I work for this company, and we've got like 46 computers to make sure people get cardboard boxes when they want them. And one of our systems has a server and a backup server. And I know you guys are operating not on a shoestring, but on a sewing thread here and there. So for all concerned, just let us all be patient. It'll all come to us in due time.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Network-wise. Cyber gremlin-wise, gee willikers. I heard a wonderful interview. This guy was diagnosed with cancer. He said after 4 months he was effectively cured, and he considered it an inconvenience. I started to say maybe we were inconvenienced because we couldn't call into you. And then I said, no, inconvenience just dropped off the, that just dropped off the verbal menu right there. So let's just all give it a while, and we'll sort through it, because the Head On Radio Network, it's the greatest, most glorious case of the DIY at its finest. That's do-it-yourself for those of you that don't have a history in punk rock. It's just this wonderful, some way, somehow, just because they feel like getting it there, it does get done. So let's just, let's revel in it when we have it, knowing we're all hitting for average, and it's going to go up soon.
Yeah, and our on-base percentage is just hell.
You guys work so hard for a walk. I'm not kidding you. Never mind that long ball.
We play small ball, David.
And you do it so very, very well. But if there's hope in Kansas, there's hope in Tennessee and West Virginia.
And maybe even Alabama. Now let's not press our luck.
Bob, thanks for letting me rant for a little bit. I just beat your break all the daylight.
That's all right. Always a pleasure, David. Take care.
Thanks, man.
Later.
See ya.
And let's roll it right along. Bob calling from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the show. So, thanks for waiting so long, man. Bob? Jim? Hey, Jim. Okay. Well, you'll have that from time to time. Patience, people. Patience. I know radio shows where people sit on hold for two and a half hours. And then I get poof after 5 minutes. Oh, well, yeah, what am I complaining about? Just happy to be here. I want to back up to something. Backing up just a minute. I mentioned the journalism thing. What you're about to watch as we move toward November, you are going to see the absolute I've had the blessing, if you will, of watching television, political television commercials for the last week or so. And it is hilarious. I wish I had the TV card in the machine down here. I would capture these things and put them on the internets. Because there is, you cannot beat for high comedy. You cannot beat watching one Republican call another Republican a godless liberal. What did these damn fools expect? They tried to create a one-party state. And now they've pretty much got it. And look what they get. Bigotry. Every single candidate out there has the phrase, because I think they've all hired the same political consultant. Every single person out the candidate out there has the same, and protects our conservative family values here in Alabama. Really? Our conservative family values here in Alabama, where poor people can't go to the doctor when they're sick. Where two people who love each other and are committed to each other can't form a civil union because of, well, let's see, 50 years ago it was because of the color of their skin. But you get the idea. Same bigotry, different topic. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, an interview. I think you're going to enjoy this. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The Delphi bankruptcy case resumes today with the union presenting their side. Both the union and the auto parts maker have expressed that there is still a possibility an agreement can be reached by the start of the United Auto Workers annual convention in Detroit on June 11th. The current proposal has Delphi cutting wages from $27 per hour to $16.50 per hour. In order for that plan to go through, General Motors would be required to contribute. Without a GM contribution, Delphi is only willing to pay $12.50 an hour. Delphi is seeking to throw out current contracts, while the UAW membership has authorized leadership to call a strike if needed.
In Baltimore, baseball season means a summer of justice campaign on behalf of low-wage stadium cleaners against baseball billionaire Peter Angelos, owner of the Baltimore Orioles. The United Workers Association is gearing up now for a June 24th March Against Poverty. Angelos promised in 2004 to pay these workers a living wage, but has yet to keep his word. Veronica Wheeler is a young activist with the United Workers Association.
We organize day labor for our sports arena at Camden Yards, and it's like pulling all poor people together to help poor people. We're trying to solve the problem about the workers working low wage salaries, and we're trying to better the working conditions and that people can live more substantially.
On June 23rd, the United Workers Association is holding an all-night vigil, and then will march to Baltimore's Camden Yards on the 24th. Wheeler says it's important that day laborers who do the stadium cleaning for the Orioles get the support of the community in their quest for a living wage.
Amtrak signal workers are accusing the railroad of pulling the brake on negotiations. The Brotherhood of Railroad Signalmen says Amtrak refuses to bargain in good faith and has been purposely stalling negotiations. The signalmen have not received a wage increase in 7 years. The union says that Amtrak only wishes to pay signalmen overtime if they work more than 40 hours in a week, instead of if they work more than 8 hours in a day. And now here's Greg Gordon with the Wynn Sports Report.
The Association of Minor League Umpires settled their season-long strike Tuesday and ratified a 6-year collective bargaining agreement. In a deal with the Professional Baseball Umpires Corporation, the umpires get a $100 a month salary raise and an increase in per diem of $3 a day. The new contract also guarantees the umpires that the days missed during the strike will count towards service time. Minor league teams have been using college and non-union umpires as replacements. The umpires have been on the picket line since April 6th and will return to work by June 12th.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back. We're halfway through this Monday evening edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. I don't know where the time goes, but we are joined on the phone by a friend, a new friend of the program, a gentleman by the name of David Johns. He's from Massachusetts. David, you've worked. You're in Massachusetts, and you have worked in the mental health industry, and you have been an active advocate in terms of human rights and marriage equity rights. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And more than anything else, or not more than anything else, but as well as all of that, you also have taken advantage of Massachusetts's law that allows human beings to commit to one another civilly and legally. And you got married in what, 2004?
August 10th, 2004. I was with my partner, John, since 1980, and we were able to get married in 2004. And since now, then, there's been close to 8,000 other same-sex couples that have been legally married in Massachusetts.
Have you seen either for pro or con, David, have you seen any changes in the social structure there in the Commonwealth?
Definitely not. As a matter of fact, I think if you were to take a poll of the general citizenry of Massachusetts, the majority of people would say that would not be in favor of banning gay marriage. They realize that nobody's marriage has been harmed because I got married.
Well, one of the things that you described for me when you were telling me about yourself was the fact that you've testified in front of the Massachusetts legislature. And we've, just as a little bit of a background, a lot of the things we find and talk about on this program, David, it turns out they wind up being worker issues and labor issues. And your testimony in front of the Massachusetts Legislative Judiciary Committee in regard to domestic partner benefits for state employees, a lot of this boils down to issues of the rights of workers with regard to their benefits, doesn't it?
Yes, you know, member of a union, SEIU Local 509, and unions and labor organizations have always said that advocated for equal benefits for equal work. Well, for a number of years, I haven't been able to access the same benefits that my fellow workers were able to get. And even now, even though I'm legally married in Massachusetts and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts recognizes marriage, as far as the federal government goes, we're not married.
So, what all does that speak to in terms of the federal angle, David?
Well, I guess what's relevant today is, as you know, Bush gave his obviously politically motivated speech to support the constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. And if this actually were to bear fruition, since federal law always trumps state laws, this could conceivably annul all the legal marriages in Massachusetts.
That stuns me.
That could very well happen. If this actually were to happen, I mean, apparently they don't have the votes right now to pass, and it's obviously a grandstanding part to divert attention from the many problems the Bush administration has elsewhere, and to re-energize his conservative base.
Well, David, do you think this really does energize them? Are they? I mean, I make a lot of jokes on this program about, you know, they're not real smart, they're, you know, stupid, right, and evil, things like that. Is there some way that we can talk about this issue that will make it more real to them, or make them see what bigots they are being used for?
Well, as you probably know, those groups that are very proactive in fighting against gay rights are very focused, and unlike the people that support gay marriage and so-called liberals, they do vote, they're well organized, and they have a single-mindedness, like, you know, groups like Family Research Council, those kind of things.
What I'm trying to get at here, David, the mental image that people have when we talk about gay marriage or gay civil unions or something that would open the door, for instance, to full federal citizenship. Because I think this is a citizenship issue too. I have a mental picture of the wedding of the wedding in my mind. But what I don't have, what I don't have, and what I think most Americans don't have, is a picture of the paperwork issues, things relating to disability benefits, for instance, or survivor benefits, or being able to pass one's real estate through survivorship in a deed. All of those things are as much or more a part of this marriage issue than the simple act of having a minister or a justice of the peace say some words over a book. Well, I mean, am I correct?
Yes. I believe there are, and I don't know all of them, I'm not an attorney, and I'm not a civil rights attorney, but there are something like 1,300 specified benefits for people that are married that are not available for people that are not married. Now, I'm sure people have heard of instances in states where there are no same-sex partnership protections, where one partner becomes deceased, and then the family of the other part of the deceased partner will just abrogate all the personal property, your home, and things like that.
Well, and among other things, you know, one of the things that the Republicans talk about is how onerous our tax burden is as citizens. You know, we've all heard George Bush stand out there and talk about how it's your money and we're going to get the government off your back and you're paying too much taxes. Well, you and your partner, even though you're married in the eyes of the state of Massachusetts, you still have to file separate tax returns, do you not?
Well, I'm able to, because my partner is also retired, and I'm actually retired. And because his income falls below a certain level, I'm able to declare him as a dependent. But if he were working as such and had an income above a level, you're right. We couldn't not file joint returns. In the Massachusetts, we could. And beyond that, I have health insurance through the Commonwealth, group health insurance, and John is I'm able to insure John. But if he had an income above a certain level, that portion of his health benefit I would have to declare as income on my federal return, whereas somebody that is a straight couple that is married would not have to declare that. So that is certainly an unfair penalty.
Well, I know you mentioned to me in our correspondence that you had spent your career, even though you're now retired, in the mental health industry. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Obviously, I mean, I'm one of those who believes that access to all levels of care, be it mental health care or oncology care or cardiac care, any of that, is a right of an American citizen. You mentioned being able to carry your partner on your coverage. What about what about young working gay couples?
Well,
is that?
Go ahead.
No, I was. This just see. I mean, I can't help. This is an institutional bigotry.
In states where do not recognize partners, they would not be able to carry their partner. Now, there had never been domestic partnership benefits carried in for state employees. There were. For a few years, there were actually, if you were a manager in the state system and you had a same-sex partner, you could get insurance. But for the average worker who worked for the state until gay marriage was passed, they could not access health insurance. So, in other words, until May 17th of 2004, when same-sex marriage became legal in Massachusetts, I would not have been able to get John on my policy no matter what.
And is this,
I'm sure, exists in most other states in this country.
I think you're probably right. Is it possible, and this is pure speculation, so I apologize in advance, is it possible that the emotional, bigoted, ugly, hateful side of this debate, as we're seeing evinced in the Senate and in the right wing circles, could this be subterfuge, David? Could this be something that is we use the emotional, bigoted aspect of this because for instance, employers out there are afraid it's going to cost them more in terms of benefits and health care?
Well, I mean, I give you two answers to that. I know that there have been, particularly in this state, Massachusetts, there have been actuary studies of what the costs are. And when the State Insurance Commission calculates what the cost of insurance is for each employee, they factor in that the individual employee is going to have a spouse and children, and by having gay people being married, which is still a relatively small percentage of the total populace, it really doesn't make that much difference. Now, the second part of my answer to that is, I really believe that the people that are really involved in the right-wing causes, you know, the Jerry Falwellites, Pat Robertsons, those kind of people.
Right.
They honestly believe that homosexuality is something evil and that we're out to recruit their children and molest their children and all kinds
the
of
gay,
things.
Yeah, the gay agenda.
Right, the gay agenda. And I think...
I'm still trying to find a copy of it.
In this state, I think that people have seen that after marriages have occurred, gay marriages have occurred, people see that the society and the fabric of the state has not fallen apart, and most people, I think, like myself and John, we live a quiet, domestic, nondescript life where we have the same concerns of everybody else, you know, property taxes, potholes, public safety, and education, things like that, that anybody else, any resident, any taxpayer is involved in, and it just is like a non-factor because we're of the same sex.
How do you get that? How do you get that message? I mean, I realize that you're not leading a cause. You're living a quiet life in a suburb or something, and you're worried about potholes, and you're worried about making sure that the garbage gets picked up, and your property tax rates, and all of that. How do you help people to understand that?
Well, I think by being active in the political process, speaking out, I've been interviewed a number of times on local television stations, letters to the editor. I'm involved in the political process. As a matter of fact, I was a delegate to the state Democratic Convention, which just occurred over this weekend. And by the way, the Massachusetts Democratic Party, as part of its platform, which was established last year, does endorse same-sex marriage. There was, at last year's convention, there wasn't even any discussion. It was just put up as a motion and passed.
Let me ask you a question, if I may, David. And that pertains to, there are different, and this is maybe one of the problems, the community is somewhat segmented over, some say full marriage rights or none at all, and others say, yeah, okay, civil unions, big deal. Is there a great deal of difference between the two?
Yes, there is, yes. Civil unions such as exist in Connecticut now in Vermont provide some benefits, but it's like a second-class marriage. There's a lot of benefits that are not the same. It's not the same as marriage. For example, I believe, it would not be recognized for tax benefits. And I'm not an attorney. Somebody from
sure.
GLAD or one of those organizations that is directly involved in that could be better versed on what the specific benefits are. But there's limited benefits from civil unions. It's not the same as marriage. It's like a second-class marriage, and not
just
marriage.
Just like this constitutional amendment that's being debated would create is it fair to say it would create a second-class citizenship in the United States, do you think?
Well, essentially, it's like overkill, because actually the only state in this country where gay marriage is permitted is Massachusetts. I mean, there is current litigation going on in New York and I believe California where that might be ruled again. That's just the way it is.
Well, it's, I really.
In Massachusetts now, actually, there is actually a current attempt to pass a state constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. And it's kind of a complicated process, but what it is the right-wing groups, they got the required number of signatures to do that, to bring it before the legislature, and they did that fraudulently. People were thinking they were signing a petition to allow beer and wine sales in grocery stores when they were actually signing a petition to ban gay marriage. And a couple of years earlier, they tried the same tactic where people thought they were signing a petition to ban horse meat in Hamburg, believe it or not. So they got enough signatures, and the state attorney general, who is now running for the Democratic nomination for governor, ruled that it was legal to go forward with a petition. He's trying to play both sides of the issue. His name is Tom Riley, and I did not vote for him, and he didn't get the endorsement of a convention. But in July, there's going to be a state constitutional convention, and if 50 of the 200 legislators pass it, it'll go before them again in 2007, and then if it passes again in 2008, there'll be a binding referendum with election, and if the majority of the voters of Massachusetts pass it, beginning in 2009, early 2009, from that point on, there could never be any more gay marriage, any more civil unions, or any domestic partnership benefits. Although the law does specifically say that all gay marriages that will have taken place by then in Massachusetts will be valid. Although, as I said earlier, if this United States constitutional amendment passes, this could very well invalidate mine and John's marriage and the other 8,000 legally married couples in Massachusetts and those that would be married between now and 2000 or whenever it would pass.
Well, David, I'm not up there, so I'm really not tied in, you know, with what goes on in local media or anything, but has anyone up there ever directly confronted one of these right-wing monsters and just said, why do you hate me? I mean, does that happen? I mean, has there been a... I'd love to hear that question answered. Because, I don't tolerate the, well, you know, it says in the second book of Leviticus that thou shalt...
Well, no. As you know, our governor, who is trying to become president, Mitt Romney.
Yeah, Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
Sure.
He's been campaigning in South Carolina trying to get support from right-wing groups. But I think that the tactic in this state isn't to go the biblical route, just saying that quote unquote activist judges are trying to determine the will of the people, and marriage has always been but between a man and a woman, so therefore that's the way it should be. If this constitutional amendment passes, it would still leave the possibility of allowing civil unions in Massachusetts. But you know that when you and I know that if that were to happen, they would fight civil unions just as well. But a lot of the major newspapers in this state have been very forthwith in supporting gay marriage. I know my hometown newspaper, the Springfield Republican, and it's not a Republican newspaper, was one of the first major dailies to come out very much four square for gay marriage. And, of course, the Boston Globe and some other newspapers in the state have been very supportive of it.
Well, you've got a fight on your hands. A listener just sent me a link to knowthyneighbor.org.
Yes, yes, I know. Yes, that is a exactly. I know, I'm very familiar with that website. It's what it was is set up by these two gentlemen. They're both married, and the they initially set it up so that anybody that signed this petition to ban gay marriage, it's public knowledge. So they were able to access whoever signed the petition anywhere in the state, and they posted on their website. That's how the, that's what they were the first to do it. And there's another group called Mass Equality, which is the all-encompassing site for support of gay marriage and gay rights issues. They also have posted it. So this is, if you go to that site, knowthyneighbor.org or massequality.com, they would have a listing of every single person that signed this petition. And it also served for people to check if their name was put in there improperly. And there have been a number of people whose names were forged or incorrectly put, and then they were challenged.
Well, it's a messy business up there, and I just went down this knowthyneighbor.org, and there's a picture of one of my favorite loathsome individuals in America, James Dobson, you know, of Colorado Springs. What is a preacher from Colorado Springs got any business talking about what people in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts can do? I don't know.
Well, you know, somebody like I would rather deal with somebody like a Fred Phelps, you know, of the Topeka Baptist Church, the one that goes around protesting funerals and also, you know, at the funeral of Matthew Shepard, they brought signs, you know, what's it, God hates fags. That's their main thing. But, you know, at least with him and his group, there's absolutely no doubt about where they stand. You know exactly what you're dealing with. With the other groups that are less vitriolic in their rhetoric, they try to make, like, they're compassionate and all that, and they're actually as bad or worse than the Topeka Baptist Church.
Right. The love the sinner, hate the sin crowd. Oh,
yes,
God.
Exactly.
They make me crazy.
Yeah.
David Johns, I really appreciate you joining us this evening, and I thank you for just speaking on the topic, because while this is a radio show arguably geared toward people who probably already agree with your situation, you never know when somebody might be on the fence and hear this and think about it in a different manner, because I think one of the things we've got to do is find a way to speak to people and explain to them that nobody's family is threatened. There's a greater threat out there to marriage from people like Newt Gingrich, who reveres marriage so much he's done it three or four times, or Rush Limbaugh.
He divorced one of his wives on her deathbed.
Served papers on her while she was being treated for cancer. You're absolutely right. That doesn't honor marriage. But I get the sensation. I get the sensation that you and John really are. And for that, you have my admiration, because it takes a lot to make a marriage work, and it takes a lot regardless of gender or race or class. It is an act of commitment, and it is something that I think is valuable in society.
Well, I think,
and should be more available.
I think it's very important for those of us that support equal rights for all couples and all people to not be just sit back, but it's important to be active, even and be proactive, even if something doesn't directly affect you as a person. I'm actively fighting this constitutional amendment in Massachusetts, even though if it passes, my marriage, at least in Massachusetts, would not be affected. but future generations would be. So I think it's important
right.
for those of us that care to always to be active and be proactive. Talk to your neighbors, write your legislators, write the newspapers, speak up, and don't be afraid to speak up.
I think that's critical to the entire process. David Johns, thank you very much. I appreciate your time, and I hope we'll hear from you again sometime.
Okay,
please keep us up to date.
It was a pleasure talking to you.
It was my pleasure as well. Take
okay.
care.
Good night.
Bye now. Our new friend, David Johns, from Springfield, Massachusetts. And by the way, if you want to hear some great music, he mentioned his partner, John. His partner, John, runs something called MyGayRadio.com. Great tunes. Give it a listen. Might hear somebody you know. Not me. But I think one of our good friends is maybe the number one DJ on that site right now. This is the Head On Radio Network. It's time for news. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. The Senate today debated the Marriage Protection Amendment, a proposal that appeals mainly to those who would limit marriage to heterosexual couples and would define in a constitutional amendment an issue that is largely religious in nature. Senator Sam Brownback, Republican of Kansas, likened marriage to the defense of democracy.
A functioning marriage culture serves to protect political liberty and foster limited government.
According to the latest counts, the Republicans do not have enough votes to actually pass this amendment. The Pentagon has decided to omit from new detainee policies a key tenet of the Geneva Convention that explicitly bans, quote, humiliating and degrading treatment, end quote, according to knowledgeable military officials. A step that would mark a further, potentially permanent shift away from strict adherence to international human rights standards. The decision could culminate a lengthy debate within the Defense Department, but will not become final until the Pentagon makes new guidelines public, a step that has been delayed. However, the State Department fiercely opposes the military's decision to exclude Geneva Convention protections and has been pushing for the Pentagon and White House to reconsider. The Defense Department officials acknowledged. Every morning, as ambulance cars and police vehicles rush to the hospital in Bab al-Mahdum, carrying corpses of unidentified victims, a queue of women, teenagers, and elderly men forms in front of the morgue as people search for their relatives, fearing they might be found among the bodies. Usually one of their family members is lost or kidnapped by gunmen and then turns up after a week or so later as a corpse with gunshot wounds to the body. A further victim in the latest wave of sectarian violence or civil war that has swept through Iraq in recent months. Iraq's main morgue had never received that huge number of corpses on a daily basis, not since modern Iraq was established in the 1920s. According to statistics by Iraq's Morgues Institute, 6,002 corpses were found in the past 5 months, 1,068 in January, 1,110 in February, 1,294 in March, 1,155 in April, and 1,375 in May. Most of the corpses had gunshot wounds, while others showed marks of burns or electrocution. Morgues Institute officials said that since the Institute was established in 1927, it had never received such a huge number of corpses as currently, with the daily average now 35 to 50 corpses per day. Before the U.S.-led coalition invasion of Iraq and toppling of Saddam Hussein in 2003, the Institute used to receive only 7 to 10 corpses per day. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
While it's not on the front page, the genocide in Darfur, Western Sudan continues. Rapes and other physical attacks still occur regularly, and large-scale food shortages may be just around the corner. But there is something you can do to make sure the U.S. government takes action to end this nightmare. Over 1,000 people have made the pledge to call or email the White House every weekday until President Bush ensures the deployment of 44,000 peacekeeping troops in Darfur. Give a voice to your conscience. Visit DarfurPledge.org.
At least four clients of the lobbying firm Copeland, Lowry, Jacquez, Denton, and White have been subpoenaed by a federal grand jury in Los Angeles as part of a probe of Representative Jerry Lewis, Republican of California, the chairman of the powerful House Appropriations Committee. Federal investigators are looking into the ties between Lewis and former Representative Bill Lowry, Republican of California, a partner in Copeland Lowry, and are focusing at this point chiefly on Jeffrey Shockey, a deputy chief of staff for the Appropriations Panel who previously worked for the lobbying firm, several sources close to the probe have said. Electronic voting machines adopted widely after the disputed Florida ballot count in the 2000 presidential election are under legal attack as primary election season heats up. Lawsuits have been filed in at least six states, the most recent last week in Colorado, to block the purchase or use of computerized machines. Voter Action, a nonpartisan advocacy group, led the challenge filed Thursday against the state of Colorado in nine counties, as well as similar lawsuits in California and Arizona this spring and New Mexico last year. Court actions by others targeted the devices in Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. Most of the suits argue that the machines are vulnerable to software tampering, don't keep an easy recountable printed record, and may miscount, switch, or not record votes, and even add phantom votes. The mother of a man who died after being delayed for surgery is suing the Manhattan hospital that, quote, let him die, end quote, the New York Post is reporting. Livia Prieto is seeking punitive damages for the wrongful death of her son, Manny Lanza, from the hospital, as well as the three doctors who treated him. Lanza died 2 months after his surgery to relieve the swelling of his brain vessels was delayed. According to St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital's records, Lanza was waiting for Medicaid coverage to cover the cost of the surgery. For the Head-On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Tonight's final hour of Head-On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right. If you've got a bee under your bonnet or a burr under your saddle, deal with it. We've only got an hour left on this Monday night edition of Head-On. Straight to the phones. Jim is joining us from Beckley, West Virginia. Hey, Jim, welcome to the show.
You're not supposed to tell them where I am.
No, I'm not.
No, that's classified.
Oh. No, okay. Secure undisclosed location. That's not it. In Beckley, West Virginia.
That's it. And who's robbing this train? You or Jesse? Remember that one?
Yes, I do.
Well, let's see here. Let's see. I had a few things I'd lined up, but I've just taken my medication and it's a little, I'm in a fog. Oh, this morning on the Steve O. Butthole show.
Oh, yeah, Steve O. Lordy.
A royal round robin about the same-sex marriage amendment. I have never heard such caterwauling, name-calling. It sounded like a hog-calling contest on there. It was just something to be believed. God almighty, somebody has got to record this to posterity. I mean, I could take that show and record it, and I could sell it for millions for a comedy album.
I mean, we've thought about this, Jim.
Huh?
We've thought about this.
I mean, you should have heard the stuff going on, and he was just bellowing at the top of his lungs. and he said that he didn't want to have anything to hurt gay people with or whatever, but he just wanted to have the opportunity to vote. And I bet if you asked that stupid SOB how the constitutional process worked, he couldn't even give you the fractions of the number of representatives and senators or the percentages of the states it would take to enact a constitutional amendment.
Well, Jim, you got to remember, this is a guy who thinks that the Ohio River flows north.
Well, yeah, and, you know, this whole thing is simply a red herring, and they're just bringing this out. I think Brer Bush brought it out this morning, and they've coordinated all this stuff because, I mean, why would
Biden
all of a sudden decide to start talking about this, about Adam and Steve versus Adam and Eve? You know,
well, Jim, to be brutally honest, I've been getting, you know, I get right-wing talking points in my email, and I've been getting talking points on this for two solid months.
Really?
I'm not kidding. Yeah, that's how long this has been in the making.
It's all well orchestrated, where they're going to try to generate something that is really a non-issue and try to divert people's attention from their own mistakes, to try to get them all hot and bothered over something that really isn't, as far as I'm concerned, worth a shit. And that's my language, not yours. But it's not. And, you know, I'm going to say this. This is my opinion on it, and I don't give a damn who likes it or who doesn't. As long as it's love, the Lord doesn't mind, because, by God, there's enough hate in this world.
Well said.
And, you know, I don't have time to go around trying to tend anybody else's business. I was telling your beloved wife, I said, Agnes, I said, damn it, I have 24/7 minded my own damn business, and I don't have time to tend to anybody else's, and I don't want anybody tending mine. Hell, the only thing they'd look in my house and see would be me looking like Caligula on top of whatever Recamier I'm on, with two cats, and if that's what melts their butter, then I'll put a bucket outside, and they can put money in and pay me.
Go, Jim, go.
I'll even have Cecil Beaton do the lighting. Well, he's dead, or somebody do the lighting, and somebody else have me artfully draped. But I mean, what is wrong with these people? I mean, I don't understand this.
Well, Jim, that's the question I keep asking.
Is that empty?
Well,
I mean, I'm a virtual shut-in, okay? But at least I keep things to keep myself busy, and, you know, I have things that I do. And part of them is not minding somebody else's business or trying to make their life unhappy, because gay people have enough problems as it is.
Let's work on that. Let's work on this for just a second. Let's back, because you ask a very valid point or a very valid question. What, you know, what's wrong with these people that they got to mind other people's business? And it goes to a mindset. You know, this debate is not taking place anywhere else in the world. This debate isn't taking place in France or Germany or England or Italy or China.
The Germans put Article 175 behind them a long time ago.
1968.
Yeah, and the French, I mean, you know, they could care less. I mean, you know, one thing about the French, I mean, at least I got to give them credit for a lot of things. And, of course, these people, the only Paris they've ever been to is probably Paris, Texas. But nonetheless, you know, we can learn from our cousins across the pond. And so have the British, you know. I mean, good Lord, I mean, who cares?
But I think the thesis that I'm working toward, Jim, is that these people are so emotionally and mentally and intellectually bereft,
disaffected,
that they cannot define self-worth for themselves without having some sliding scale of another group that they put down in order to lift themselves up.
Self-augmentation at the expense of another human being.
Yeah.
One of the oldest sins that Cain slew his brother Abel. And that's the truth. And I'll tell you one thing. These people, and I've said this before, they will labor like scholars over the pedigree of their own stupidity and ignorance and arrogance and just pig-headedness. But every damn one of them would have slept right through the Sermon on the Mount.
Yeah.
They would have snored right through it.
Absolutely. I mean, do you, on your cable setup, Jim, do you get the Trinity Broadcasting Network?
No, but I get Logo, and I watch Logo a hell of a lot more than I watch TBN.
Well, it's on this network down here, and or on this cable system down here, and I swing by it from time to time, and it's Rod Parsley, and it's
that.
Joel Osteen, and they all, you know, they and today it was Kenneth Copeland and the Believer's Voice of Victory screaming, and I mean it, hallelujah, Jesus is in business in America. Jesus is doing business in America. That's a direct quote, Jim.
Well, do they remember the time when he found some other people doing business in the temple and ran their ass out?
That's not in their Bible.
Or do they gloss over that?
That, you know, they've taken that part out. They've taken the parts out about the poor and not mistreating the poor and loving your neighbor as yourself.
Absolutely. You know, it's just ridiculous. And there's one other thing, and I wanted to mention this, and this has to do with the. Something that's really been a bee in my bonnet or whatever. I guess if I say I wear a bonnet, people might talk, but who cares? But, you know,
right.
This business about the funding for 9/11 for New York and Washington, cut 40%, you know, that's a real kick in the rubber parts for those cities.
Since, yeah, it is.
It says there are no national landmarks in New York City. I mean, you know, I heard Nancy Giles, and I always watch CBS Sunday Morning, which is a wonderful news program for me, with Charles Osgood.
Yeah, very good.
And she is this black lady who does wonderful, wonderful end pieces towards the end of the show. And she's a native New Yorker, and she said, you know, what's the deal here? 40% cuts for Washington. She thinks these people are just, they only hit one place and they move on. And it just goes to show you, the mindset and the think state of some of these so-called people who are in charge of this government. You know, I don't think since the time of the late Tsar Nicholas II, when his wife was picking all the ministers, have we had such a bunch of idiots and nincompoops in charge of anything. Do you?
I know. If you look at... You know, New York and D.C. got screwed for a reason. Look where the money's going, Jim.
They're heavily Democratic, and it's all political. You know that. I mean,
yeah, but it's more insidious than that. This money is going to states where they're building these detention centers, Jim.
Oh, you mean out in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah.
Well, why would they build about there? Why would they want to protect them? It seems like they want to begin that first. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm just not thinking too clearly.
No, there are. I understand. I understand what you're getting at. But yeah, we are building detention centers to hold thousands and thousands and thousands of human beings. It has been verified. This isn't something kooky you would find on Art Bell or Jeff Rentz or any of that. This is real. They are building detention centers meant to house hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people in this country. And it takes money to do that. Halliburton has the contract. And you can't build one in the middle of Midtown.
Well, you know, I'll tell you.
But you can build one in Indiana.
Well, you know, here's the thing. There's a precedent set for this, and the Germans did it during World War II. And they did it with very few people knowing, in obscure places, near railheads or transportation hubs,
mm-hmm.
places like Auschwitz and Treblinka and...
Dachau, Bergen-Belsen, Sobibor.
Sobibor. And, you know, basically that's... And how long has this been in progress?
A year or more. You know, this is the stuff that's going on in America while the Johnny on the spot mainstream media is writing articles about James Dobson and why he thinks marriage is under attack. That's what makes me so cotton picking angry about this whole stupid, fraudulent, dummied up, ginned up issue.
And they're going to take these people, and they're going to take, I guess, anybody they want to take, right?
Well, they won't say exactly who it's for, and I can't remember where the location, the link is, but I've watched video of like an old train repair station in Indiana. and it's got Homeland Security stuff all over it, and new security cameras, and all the barbed, you know how the barbed wire at the top of the chain link fence, you know,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's canted at an angle.
Right, of course.
Right. Well, the barbed wire on at the top of these chain link fences at this old train station is now canted inward, Jim.
Well, let's keep people inside, obviously.
Right.
That's the way they do it in prisons and stuff like that. That's just standard prison architecture. But, I mean, and they're building all these things, and they're going to contain whoever they wish to contain. Well, what are they going to do? Do you think they're going to have some type of coup d'etat and try just to stay in power by force?
I don't know. I mean, I sit there and try to play chess with some of this stuff. There are some who have said that this is going to be for illegal aliens. People who don't have documentation and yet wash toilets in America, that we're going to round them up and put them there before we ship them back to Mexico.
No, you don't build permanent centers like that. I mean, these.
But they're just like Dachau because they're beside railheads, Jim.
I know, and like I say, you know, every time I recorded that movie Conspiracy, which is basically a documentary of the Wannsee Conference, and you know, I watch that at least once a month, just to remind me of just this could happen again, and these people could sit around just like they did back in that house in that beautiful lake in Berlin. And plans of destruction in millions of so many people. And I realized that, you know, history has taught people absolutely not one thing. And it just breaks my heart. It really does.
Well,
I'll tell you, but getting back to this gay marriage thing, they're bringing this thing back out of the closet, and they're trying to, you know, cause all kinds of problems. Now, Bob, I'm going to be honest with you. As far as gay marriage in the church is concerned, I'll spotted that, okay? I'd be willing to concede that to them. As long as these people could have domestic partnerships in which they could have, you know, property rights and health insurance and things of that nature, okay? Fine. If they're without benefit of clergy, that doesn't bother me, okay? It really doesn't, because I think you and I have differences of religion. We won't get into that now, okay? But I think you know.
Yeah, but I'm all First Amendment. What people want to do is their business. And if you've got laws like this, Jim, if you've got a constitutional amendment that says people can't get married to the person they love, you have just you've just danced all over a couple of denominations' fundamental beliefs. The United Churches of Christ marry gay people. So do the Metropolitan Community Churches.
Yeah, I know about them. I've heard about them. Well,
and they will marry people of the same gender.
Go ahead and do it, but I mean, what I'm saying is the church does not legally have to recognize I'm just saying the church would not have to legally recognize them.
Oh no! You could never compel that. That would be a blatant abuse of the First Amendment.
That's all I'm saying right there. Okay.
Yeah. But the thing is, I want
partnerships and people to have rights, and I want them to have the benefits. At least the good part of marriage, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the benefit.
Well, and why should we punish two people?
We should. There's no reason. I mean, these people, ever since they've realized what they are, they've been told by the minister they're going to hell. They've been told by many doctors back in days past that they're sick. They've been told by their lawyers that they're going to go to jail. I mean, does that create a stable human being? But yet, yet amongst these people are some of the most artistically talented and gifted individuals in the world. I mean, how many times have I heard the PSA about Nureyev? And it would have been such a wonderful thing if Ronald Reagan had acted more quickly about getting the CDC an electron microscope and working with the French over at the Louis Pasteur Institute. Nureyev might still be around, at least teaching somebody how to do the Texas two-step, if not Grand Jetés, okay? But no, that didn't happen. He died. And when I think about some of the artists and things and the people who have died, I mean, the people who've given us a lot of our art and literature, I mean, these people were gay. Leonardo da Vinci was gay. I mean, there were so many people who've been, you know, homosexual and who have contributed so vastly to our mainstream of arts and letters. My God, are they going to start burning their books now and burning their paintings and stuff?
We had that story, and it took. There was a bill introduced in the legislature in this very state, Alabama, Jim, a year ago, that would have forbidden the University of Alabama to carry any books on its shelves by gay authors dealing with gay themes. So, yeah, they want to burn the books, too.
Well, Bob, I'll tell you this, and this, I'm going to end it on this note. Well, they'll burn books, they'll burn people.
Ain't it the truth? Ain't it the truth, Jim? Thank you so much for some very cogent observations. I do appreciate it.
Well, they're heartfelt, and I tell you one thing. I think it's a terrible thing that we have come to this, in this so-called land of freedom and land of opportunity and supposedly a place where, you know, people can, you know, lift their heads up. I mean, they had Mary Cheney on this afternoon, and I couldn't believe what she had to say. She was just talking about, you know.
I saw Dick Gephardt's daughter, and I immediately thought about Mary Cheney and wondered where she. What did she say,
well,
Jim?
She just basically said that, you know, she thought that they were discriminating against this the way they used to discriminate against blacks and interracial marriage.
And now, wait a minute. The vice president's daughter said this?
Yes, she did. She said it to, what's his name? Who is the blonde-haired guy who gets it? Chris Matthews.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, she did. I mean, she did say that. And I must say she acquitted herself quite well. And, I just wish these people would just back off and just leave it be and let these things take care of themselves, leave it up to the states, and they don't need to have any voting on it.
Well, see, there's one thing I might differ with you a little bit, Jim, when you say leave it up to the states. We left it up to the states, and I think it was all the way up into the 1980s before anybody ever struck down Virginia's miscegenation laws. There are miscegenation laws still in force and in effect, technically, in the state of Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia. And that's what happens when you leave it up to the states.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, God.
You know, sometimes somebody has to step in and say wrong is wrong and right is right and point out the difference.
Your point is well made, and I thank you for your time, sir.
Well, Jim, you have a great evening.
I'll
take care.
Okay.
All right.
Good night.
Bye now. Jim makes a very valid point about the great contributions to art, dance, music, literature, poetry. You know, Walt Whitman, if that hateful bill had passed in the state of Alabama, Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass would have had to have been taken off the shelves of the library at the University of Alabama, the library at Auburn, the library at the University of North Alabama, the public library that my dear friend works at down here. It would have to, no Leaves of Grass for you. None of that. And there have been tremendous contributions, but you know what? When you get right down to it, the aim and the goal and the focus of this program is on what I call extraordinary Americans. Not ordinary Americans, extraordinary Americans. Nation on their back, and some of them happen to do it differently when the lights go off than, say, other people do. And I'm not talking about the difference between on the bed or hanging from the chandelier. And what the hell business is that of mine? Why? And this is what I was talking about, Mr. Johns, with a little bit. When do we get confrontational about this? You know, and by extension, the freedom riders of the 60s, late 50s and 60s, there were tremendous numbers of people from the Jewish community that got on board buses and came south to fight in the civil rights movement for people who were obviously not Jewish. When does the straight community stand up on this issue? Mr. Johns was and is a member of the Service Employees International Union. This is a labor issue. This is a working class issue.
If you happen to make a couple of $1 million a year, it doesn't matter a tinker's damn whether or not you file jointly or separately. But if you make 40 grand a year, being able to file jointly makes a hell of a lot of difference. When does the bigotry end in this country? When do we put the damnable, godforsaken GOP in its grave where it belongs? This filthy political party can only win by dividing people, by taking people who have been married for 35, 40 years, and I don't even want to think about those people having sex, okay? Because I'm just not that interested. I don't want to think about anybody having sex. And tells those people that their committed relationship is threatened by two guys 3,000 miles away picking out a silver service? When do we confront? When do we confront these hate merchants? The Dobsons, the Falwells, the Robertsons, and when do we confront them on the street? The little people who follow them. When do we confront them and ask them, why would you want to be a bigot? When do we take the battle to them? When do we stand up for our brothers and sisters who are every bit as human as we are? When do we stop sitting quietly while these monsters, the Sam Brownbacks and Mitch McConnells and Jeff Sessions, when do we stand up to those beasts and tell them that we will no longer tolerate a nation in which anyone is four-fifths of a human being? When? If not here, where? If not now, when? I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
The Labor Report from the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bruce Birch. 20 years ago, janitor Monica Martinez was so shy that she hid behind a sign during her first union picket outside a downtown Denver office building. 5 weeks ago, the 61-year-old Montebello woman stood on the steps of the Colorado State Capitol and told 75,000 protesters that all immigrants have dreams and deserve to be treated with dignity. When she's not cleaning floors at Denver International Airport, Martinez sits on the executive board of the Service Employees International Union Local Number 105, a labor powerhouse that has put itself at the center of the hottest issue in the country, immigration. She said through a translator, quote, "The union has the power to organize and to move us forward. We are not just members of the union. We're part of a very strong movement," end quote. Martinez, who grew up in Mexico, symbolizes the evolution of the fastest-growing union in Colorado and in the country. SEIU says it represents 5,300 healthcare workers and janitors in Colorado and 1.8 million nationwide. The international union broke off from the AFL-CIO last summer in a disagreement over organizing tactics and financial priorities. SEIU has focused much of its energy on recruiting immigrants and advocating vociferously for their needs outside of the workplace. California's largest teachers union has voted to allow non-teaching educational workers, including secretaries and bus drivers, to become members. The vote, taken at a weekend meeting of the California Teachers Association State Council, immediately unionizes about 5,000 school staffers. Those workers previously had been affiliated with the 335,000-member CTA, but are now full voting members. Before the vote, California was one of only two state teachers unions to limit membership to teachers. The Ohio Immigrant Network gathered Sunday evening across the street from the Butler County, Ohio Sheriff's Office to voice its concerns about recent developments in the relationship between local law enforcement and immigrants. The network is comprised of four groups: the Farm Labor Organizing Committee, the Immigrant Worker Project, Miguate, which supports Mayan indigenous Guatemalans, and the Coalition for the Dignity and Rights of Immigrants. The group's views come in the wake of Wednesday's raid of Carmona Construction in Fairfield Township by Sheriff Richard K. Jones' office. Documents, a computer, and computer data storage devices were taken from the search, the latest incident in Jones' plan to crack down on businesses suspected of hiring illegal immigrants. The search resulted from information deputies obtained May 18th during a roundup at a home building site in Wayne Township, according to the sheriff's office. Authorities were called to a site on Wendy Meadows Drive on a report of a dispute between two construction crews. When deputies arrived, they found nearly 20 Hispanic workers suspected of being here illegally. The suspects were loaded on a bus and taken to the sheriff's office, where they were detained, questioned, and released later in the night. For the Head On Radio Network, this has been the Labor Report. I'm Bruce Birch.
It's your life. It's their life. It's our lives. And I don't need my business minded for me by, well, I could sit here and make fun of them and talk about their polyester suits and their beehive hairdos and their incredibly flammable hair or fake hair. I could talk about how the religious right will glibly support the murder, the mass murder of 150,000 innocent civilians in a land called Iraq, and have an absolute hissy over two people wanting to be able to pass property to each other. It makes my head hurt. But I The TV media outlets were all a titter today. Fabulous talking heads interviewing people about this the gay marriage debate. And of course, you know, for every opponent of this stupid constitutional amendment, and you know, I hate that word. I hate stupid. I don't like calling things stupid. This is stupid. One of the reasons I don't like to use the word is it is overused. This is a stupid amendment, and every person who supports it is equally stupid. And I use stupid in the dictionary definition sense of the word. You know, not enough sense to come in out of the rain kind of thing. You know, and I know there are conservative Democrats out there who, you know, who believe in a lot of the same things that I believe in. A fair day's pay for a fair day's work. Health care for every American. Getting rid of George Bush by peaceful legal means before he can do any more harm to this country. I share those beliefs, and yet some of those so-called conservative Democrats say, well, yeah, but, you know, Steve and Ted, they can't get married. Jesus! And I just, what the hell is wrong with you? What does it matter? It don't matter. It's amazingly benighted. But they have, this is what they got. This is all they've got. If they were not so mean, stupid, evil, and hateful, it would be pitiable to look at a political party that has been reduced to nothing but big rocks, threats to your guns, and threats to your marriage. It astonishes me. Why that part? You know, what was the quote from Dwight Eisenhower from the letter to his nephew or uncle or cousin or something like that from the early 50s? Where he said, any political party that advocates an end to Social Security will cease to be a viable national party. Why is the Republican Party not dead? Is this it? Is that what we're watching? Are we watching the death throes of the Republican Party? If we are, I want more of these amendments. I want the American people. See, but I got my problems with the American people because I'm not, like I said, I think these elections, 2002, 2004, 2006, 2008, I think these are IQ tests, and so far, we're 0 for 3. The not-so-smart people. Well, maybe they did. I don't know. Did you read the RFK Jr. article in Rolling Stone? I think John Kerry won. I think if John Kerry would have held out and fought, he might be president. Just like if Al Gore had held out and fought, he might be president. That's a different rant. But in Alabama? I saw George Wallace Jr. called a liberal the other day on TV. George Wallace Jr. Yeah, that one. Son of George Wallace Sr. Stand in the schoolhouse door, George Wallace Sr. A liberal. He's a registered Republican. But now the Republicans are calling the other Republicans liberals. And they're trying to out-demagogue each other. And I'm thrilled to death to be watching this happen. Maybe this is a petri dish for the rest of so-called conservative America. Because like I said, every political commercial down here, tomorrow's the primary, you remember. Every political commercial down here, so-and-so will protect our conservative Alabamian values. See, this is one of the problems that we've got on our side of the fight. We are hard-pressed to confront these dirty bastards. Because you give me any one of these right-wing religion industry freaks that are running for Supreme Court in Alabama or treasurer or lieutenant governor or governor, you know, Roy Moore. Yeesh. Alabama, Uber Alles for him. You give me any one of these, and let me ask one simple question. What are those conservative values? And I or you, tortured grammar, you or I can take apart any one of those so-called conservative values and put them up and show them for the fraud that they are. They've got conservative family values down here, and yet this state taxes poor people starting at something $10,000 of income? Oh, that's compassionate. I believe, and I, you know, I vacillate a little bit, I guess. I believe we've got to become confrontational. Now, I'm not talking about going out and punching somebody in the middle of the street. That's not what I mean. But it's a little embarrassing when you hear somebody talking about their family values. And a lot of us, we do. We kind of go, "Oh, Jesus, not that," and we turn away and turn around and just, you know, get away from it. Because it has the whiff of poison to it, and we don't want to be near it. But I tell you this much, those who would cure a disease, those who would cut out a cancer, must first get near enough to reach it. We have got to become confrontational. I'm not talking about screaming at anybody, but you, whether it's in the grocery store line or while you're waiting for your oil to be changed or... wherever you hear it, if you understand that they're talking lies and being dishonest, they have to be openly confronted. As in, why do you want to lie like that? Did your mama not raise you better? Why are you lying? We have to confront it. I'm not talking about poisoning American politics. American politics has been poisoned from the get-go. The Sally Hemings, Thomas Jefferson thing is proof enough of that. And the ugly things that were said about Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton, it was ugly. It was nasty. They've been fighting. So, you know, no. But we have got to get in their faces. No finger pointing. No touchy-touchy. Why do you want to lie like that? Why do you want to be a bigot? Why do you want a politics of hate? We've got to do it. I'm convinced of it. Let's take a break. If you've got anything you want to get said, you've got a couple of minutes to get it said in. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
The president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know... If he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard and we could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to. A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a... Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Doofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Wraps up the program for this evening. Not a lot of time left. I want to point out something to you outside the usual credits. The fundraising drive has started at whiterosesociety.org. The goal is to raise $10,000 to continue the White Rose's abilities to stream this program and all the other programs on the Head On Radio Network, as well as archiving all of our programs and many, many other fine liberal talk programs. While others anyone who needs it or wants it. There's no membership, there's no subscription. There's no billing cycle. This is strictly a labor of love on the part of my good friend, our good friend, Ben Birch, who in the process of putting forward that labor of love has become the expert in regard to streaming liberal talk. So. No bills. It's a matter of doing the right thing. And, you know, if you've got a little bit to spare, it's great that you can, and it's greater that you do. make that donation, because you're helping out your brothers and sisters when you do it. If you want to, you can set up recurring billing on your credit card. And when you do that, when you have it to spare, there are people out there who don't, who literally cannot, would love to give, but cannot. Because, you see, we're not the Republicans. We're not rolling around in money. You know, Agnes and I talk from time to time about... And sometimes I joke about maybe coming on and doing Bob as a conservative talk show host. Because I could. I really could. I'd need to be like dipped by the heel in some sort of antiseptic afterward, but I could. And I'm not kidding. I would be stinking rich. And Agnes would, too, if we went the conservative, Republican hate route. Because there is always room for one more hater. In 2006, when Glenn Beck gets a nightly program on Headline News, well, you can see that there's still big money in hate. But I won't do that, and we don't do that. It's too important. It is too important to be a part of this fight for the very soul and the very decency of America. And central to that fight is our good friend Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. The sooner we make the little thermometer thingy hit $10,000, the sooner the fundraiser ends. You listening, limousine liberals? There aren't any. They get talked about a lot, but there aren't any. I haven't had any communication from our good friend Shelby LePre over at RadioPower.org in a while. I don't know if she's reached her $5,000 goal for buying equipment that was destroyed after the lightning strike. Go by RadioPower.org and see. If you haven't done anything there, do that too. God, I apologize for asking you to do these things, but it's the only way. It is the only way. Because, you know, there's a commercial model out there, you know, where I go to Bayer. And I say, please advertise Bayer aspirin on the Head On Radio Network. And they say, well, how much? And I give them a number and they say, okay. And then 2 weeks later, after the Bayer ads are running, I find out that Bayer is also involved in something nefarious and heinous and mean and rotten and nasty and filthy and dirty. And because I do maintain a certain set of core values in this program, I feel like you deserve to know about it. Because my silence is my acceptance. So it makes it hard to go out and do that kind of thing. GE? Dear God. So you get the idea. So, you know, help Ben continue what I think is the good work of the Head On Radio Network, whether it's me, Bruce Birch, John Fox, Joe Vecchio, and help us grow. Because indirectly, when you grow the White Rose Society, you grow us. Now, the show tonight was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes, and excellently, I might add. It was announced by Brian Reznor. John Fox is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network, all the way down in Australia. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT specialist. And what a resource he is. The show and every show on the Head On Radio Network happens because of the thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights, and they get up every day and they go out and they build the American dream. And by supporting the Head On Radio Network, they're helping to save the American dream too. A program reminder for tomorrow night, early in the program, Greg LeRoy, author of The Great American Job Scam. We'll be talking with him. I think you'll enjoy the discussion. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.